Hello? Hello?
Me and Abner wants to wish you a happy anniversary and...
Wait a minute, Lum. Who are we wishing this thing to?
Why, to NBC.
Who are those two old coots, Megan?
Surely, Charlie, you remember Lum and Abner. They're joining Chase and Sanborn in saying happy anniversary to NBC Radio.
Welcome to the Chase and Sanborn 102nd Anniversary Radio Show, starring Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, honors the 40th anniversary of NBC. In the next hour and a half, the makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee will bring you some of the history, trivia, entertainment, and nostalgia to be found in 40 years of NBC Radio. You will hear the voices of Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Jack Benny, Fred Allen, Al Jolson, Bob Burns, Rudy Valley, Joe Penner, Ed Wynn, Jack Pearl, Groucho Marx, Eddie Cantor, Fibber McGee and Molly, Ralph Edwards, Nichols and May, Walter Winchell, Ben Burney, Kate Smith, Goodman and Jane Ace, Amos and Andy, Burns and Allen, Red Skelton, Tallulah Bankhead, Margaret Truman, President Harry S. Truman, President John F. Kennedy, President Franklin D. Roosevelt, H.V. Kaltenborn, Gabriel Heater, Edward R. Murrow, George Hicks, King Edward VIII, Sir Winston Churchill, Will Rogers, Graham McNamee, and many more voices and sounds chosen from 40 years of history and entertainment. Your announcers for the heftier Chase and Sanborn Coffee will be Ben Grauer, Ken Carpenter, Frank Gallup, Milton Cross, Kenny Delmar, and Jimmy Wallington. That is I. Here now are your hosts, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Well, Charlie, that's quite a list, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought they'd never get to us.
Just think, Charlie, when the NBC Radio Network was born 40 years ago, it actually took two men to lift what they called a portable radio. Now a child can lift one.
I had mine lifted by a high school dropout.
What a thrill it was to get distance. I sat in Chicago and got Jada from KDKA.
How about the time you got fired from WGN?
All right, Charlie, please. Ladies and gentlemen, one of America's most beloved and successful comedians was Ed Wynn.
That's for sure. But me, gee, did I know what I was doing? I was just a kid at the time.
Charlie, what are you talking about?
Well, you see, there was Ed Wynn and Ed Bergen, and I got mixed up with the wrong Ed.
Oh, I don't know.
I'd have done better with Mr. Ed.
That'll do, Charlie. A recent magazine article said that while Ed Wynn convulsed them on radio for 30 years, the young today wouldn't understand his humor.
Any bets?
The title of tonight's opera is Rosalie. Rosalie is so fat that when she goes to bed, she reminds you of an ocean liner. It takes a couple of tugs to get her out of a slip. Now, Rosalie and her father jump on a bus, and Rosalie likes the bus driver, and she says to the bus driver, "My father and I are going to Atlantic City." The driver said, "Well, that's marvelous, because this bus ain't." This makes them sweethearts. And her father says, "You can't be that man's sweetheart. He's a middle-aged man." Rosalie says, "What's that?" The father says, "Well, Rosalie, a middle-aged man is a man who would rather not have a good time than try to get over it." I got some that are worse than that. Now, the driver, that's Philip. His name is Philip. He has only two teeth. He has one tooth in his lower jaw and one in his upper jaw. And one day, one tooth said to the other, "We ought to get together for lunch sometime." Now, Philip calls on Rosalie. The father rushes in and says to Philip, he says, "Say, you want to marry my daughter? Can you support a family?" Philip says, "Yes." The father says, "Now think hard, because there's seven of us." They decide to get married. Here my mood changes, you see. At the wedding, the judge says, "Do you take this woman, Rosalie, to be your wife?" Philip says, "I do." The judge says, "Well, I take her to be your mother." After the wedding, you know, Rosalie and Philip have a fight. This is a tremendous scene, very dramatic. Philip rushes from the house and slams the door after him. But it's a revolving door and he breaks his back. Now, but Rosalie runs away to South America. On her arrival in Buenos Aires, she reads in Walter Winchell's column that she has just become a mother in New York. This confuses her. And she rushes back to New York. She's anxious to see her child. She sees the little boy, and he is the flower of young manhood. He's a blooming idiot. She rushes back to Buenos Aires. And as the curtain comes down on the opera, Philip, frantic, trying to find his wife, puts an ad in the newspaper. And the ad reads, "Be on the lookout for Rosalie. She has stringy hair, bow legs, a big nose, no teeth. On second thought, just forget the whole thing."
Remember how cleverly some of the old radio shows opened?
All right, driver, to the little theater.
I'm too young for trivia like a first nighter or gangbusters.
How about this?
Dick Armstrong! Dick Armstrong, the all-American boy!
My only rival. Good old Sergeant Friday.
Renfro!
Careful, Bergen, you're getting awfully hoarse.
Here's a familiar old theme.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
In those days, radio was very touchy about its diction.
I wish you'd be a little touchy about mine, Bergen.
Radio quiz show started giving lavish rewards.
I have a lady here, Doctor.
$6 for the correct answer to this one.
Many of radio's biggest stars, like Eddie Cantor, Burns and Allen, and Joe Penner, were first heard on the air with Rudy Vallee.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Vallee.
Hello, Rudy.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
You want to buy a duck?
No, Joe, I don't want to buy a duck.
Isn't that Joe Penner?
Yeah. Better listen. Maybe you can lift some of his jokes.
Don't never do that.
No, Charlie. Joe's humor didn't have the smooth sophistication and the adult point of view we seek.
You nasty man!
Eddie Cantor took over the famous Chase and Sanborn Coffee Hour in 1931.
I love to spend each Sunday with you, as friend of friend, I'm sorry it's through. I'm telling you just how I feel. I hope you feel that way too. Let's make a date for next Sunday night. I'm here to stay. 'Twill be my delight to sing again, bring again the things you want me to. I love to spend each Sunday with you.
Well, Charlie, here we are back on the payroll for Chase and Sanborn Coffee.
Yeah, but it's a long time between paydays. Once in 64, once in 65.
Oh, but this is a great occasion, Charlie. The 40th anniversary of NBC. You must think positively.
I do think positively, Bergen, but you pay negatively.
Think of the honor, Charlie.
Oh, sure.
Who knows more about Chase and Sanborn Coffee than we do? We sold it for 30 years, and we're still selling it.
You know what I think, Bergen?
What?
We're in a rut.
No, but not Chasin' Sanborn, Jolly. Now there's the heftier instant Chasin' Sanborn, the coffee that really grabs you.
That's right. It's even grabbier than you are.
What a coffee. Blended heftier to cheer you up, warm you up, and perk you up.
Skinny Dugan drove over to see us, tried 2 cups of it, and got a ticket for perking.
All right, Charlie, please. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't tried instant Chasin' Sanborn lately, you haven't tried the heftier one. Heftier Chasin' Sanborn.
With a flavor that really grabs you.
Charlie, do you remember Ben Burney?
Yowza, yowza. Didn't he call himself the old maestro and have a friendly feud with Walter Winchell?
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North American. All the ships at sea. Let's go to press. Quiet.
And now we're going to play a bit of a lullaby. You all know what a lullaby is. Something that puts people to sleep, like Winchell's column.
May I say a few words about yourself, as usual?
No, about you.
Well, remember, there are ladies present.
Ben, I know I've said a few things about you in the paper and on the air. Perhaps I shouldn't have said them.
Well, I've always tried to say some nice things about you, but I couldn't think of any.
Well, that's all right, Ben. I know how hard it is for you to think.
Now the time has come to lend thine ear to au revoir, pleasant dreams. Think of us when requesting your theme. Au revoir, a fond cheerio, a toodle-doodle, a bit of a tweet-tweet, God love you, and pleasant dreams.
From the very beginning, NBC has been first with the news. In 1927, Lindbergh arrived home from Paris.
On the evening of the 21st of May last, I arrived in the Bourget, Paris. The people of Europe requested that I bring back to the people of America one message. You have seen the affection for the people of America demonstrated to you.
Whatever happened to that affection?
And here's another overseas flyer.
Tell me, Mr. Corrigan, were you aiming at Ireland, or were you aiming at Paris, or just at Europe?
Oh, no, I was aiming at Los Angeles.
H.V. Kaltenborn was dean of all newscasters. Then one day in 1941, he interrupted the calm of a Sunday to say,
"The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, the United States naval base on Oahu Island in the Hawaiian Islands."
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
A new breed of reporters took over, headed by Edward R. Murrow.
This is London.
History took on a new dimension as three networks recorded World War II. Radio was with the Marines at Iwo Jima.
See, we're going to hit the beach in just a couple of seconds. So we're going to be quiet and brace ourselves for the shot. And there we've hit the beach. Just simultaneously with that shell burst that you heard, we hit the beach.
When the NBC network picks up a broadcast outside its own studios, it's called a remote. A traveling man named Bob Hope taught them what the word remote really means.
They tell me Hope once landed on a South Pacific island to entertain the Marines 12 hours before the Marines landed.
So that's why they were shooting at me. I thought it was the jokes.
Thank you. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob Mosquito Network Hope. Thanking you boys from Guam, City, and Spain for making the Japs take it on the lab. Yes, sir, isn't it wonderful what you can do on spam, huh? Well, here we are on this beautiful, romantic South Pacific island. Boy, aren't these islands pretty? Wait till I see that Dorothy L'Amour. What a lie. But I really hope you enjoy our show today. We have a nice show here. I know you'll enjoy the girls. You remember girls? Yes, sir, they're doing very fine. In some of these islands we visited, these girls have been the first to land. Won't Eleanor be mad, huh? We've had a very fast flying trip up to now. Flew all the way down here from San Francisco. Didn't scare me a bit. I read a novel coming down. Going back, I'm going to read the second page. When we got about halfway down, the pilot turned around to me and said, "Are you a little nervous?" I said, "Yeah, this is only my third time up." He said, "You beat me. This is my first." I said, "It's a little rough out there. Don't you think we ought to have parachutes?" He said, "Don't be silly. The ones with parachutes jumped an hour ago." And talk about weather over that Pacific. It was so rough, the automatic pilot bailed out. I've never seen anything. Finally, the crew chief tapped me on the shoulder and said, "In case of an accident, the pilot is the last one to leave the plane." I said, "Why tell me that?" He says, "I don't want to make you nervous, but there he is down there."
George Hicks covered the Normandy landing.
Now planes are going overhead. That baby was plenty low. And now flak is coming up in the sky. Here we go again. Another plane's come over. Right over our port side. Looks like we're going to have a night tonight.
The commander-in-chief was a casualty. The president of the United States died at 3:35 p.m. this afternoon in the Warm Springs environment that he loved so much. An era began.
This is Ralph Howard Peterson in Washington. I have just returned from the White House, where it has just been announced that the United States is now using an atomic bomb, the most powerful explosive yet developed.
Time marches on.
Cat Durgan, you got a memory like an elephant. And hips to match. What other goodies do you plan to spread before us, Durgan?
Many people will remember this voice.
Ah, there's good news tonight.
The country went crazy.
And Ben Grauer, as usual, went to Times Square.
This is Ben Grauer in the NBC mobile unit. Someone has taken off his shoes, put them on a broomstick to signal victory, and is waving them up in front of the NBC mobile unit.
This is Robert St. John in the NBC newsroom in New York. Peace. Peace. Isn't it wonderful?
Mr. H.V. Kaltenborn made a prediction.
On the basis of the figures as they now stand on our board, Dewey has the best chance.
President Truman replied.
And Mr. Kaltenborn was saying, well, the president is a million votes ahead in the popular vote we have yet to hear. Very sure that when the country vote comes in, Mr. Truman will be defeated by an overwhelming majority.
Mr. Kaltenborn was gracious.
Last night, President Truman, in light-hearted mood, gave his Electoral College hosts a side-splitting imitation of radio commentator H.V. Kaltenborn making wrong predictions on election night. In doing that, and in the genial way in which he did it, he proved once again that for the next 4 years, we can all be human with Truman.
President Truman proved he was human.
Mr. Speaker.
Just a moment. Let me present you, will you, Harry?
Sure.
Members of the Congress, I have the great pleasure and the high privilege of presenting to you the President of the United States.
And Mr. Kaltenborn proved how human he was in a meeting with Eddie Cantor.
You know, H.V., I've heard all of your broadcasts, and those days during the last international crisis must have been pretty hectic for you.
Yes, Eddie. Sometimes I'd broadcast 24 hours a day. Gosh. In the morning, I'd send out for orange juice, and after brushing my teeth,
Wait a minute, H.V. What do you brush your teeth with?
A toothbrush.
Yeah. I knew you didn't use a whisk broom, but what do you put on the toothbrush?
My teeth.
Look, H.B., you use toothpaste, don't you?
Why, yes, of course.
What kind of paste?
The very best kind.
Yeah?
Comes out of a tube.
Well,
there's something written on the tube. What is it? What does it say?
Squeeze this end.
Well, Jimmy, it's been 2 years since we were together for Chase and Sanborn.
Yes, it's a long time between Wallingtons.
I'm glad I can put in a good word for the heftier Chase and Sanborn. It really has a flavor that grabs you, doesn't it?
What was the question?
Why, hello, Mortimer.
Now, don't try to change the subject.
Yes, but you asked me a question.
Oh, what do you do?
Yeah.
What was it?
Now, Mortimer, Jimmy Wallington is telling us about heftier Chase and Sanborn that cheers you up, warms you up, and perks you up, and you're interrupting.
And you're taking my lines.
And now you see my problem. I'm always being interrupted by Bergen or that other dummy.
Oh, shucks, Charlie. I thought you didn't like me.
Let's get out of here, Jimmy.
How about a cup of heftier Chase and Sanborn, Charlie? I'll treat.
What's that mean?
Means I'll pay for the coffee.
Oh, working with Bergen, it's been so long since I last heard I'll treat. I forgot what it meant.
The Chase and Sanborn 102nd Anniversary Radio Show, starring Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, honors the 40th anniversary of NBC. We'll continue after a 10-second pause for station identification.
Now, Charlie, I want you to listen very carefully to my friend Groucho Marx.
You old comics, you really stick together, don't you?
Groucho is talking to a 16-year-old boy who thinks he's too young to get married.
Really, Bergen? Does NBC Radio go back that far?
Well, here I am again with Phil Lamar. Now, how old are you, Phil?
16.
16,
yes.
A big boy for 16. That's a good age for a high school boy, I think. Certainly better than 41, isn't it? Are you married, Phil?
No, sir.
He would be today.
Why now?
Several reasons, I guess.
Well, could you name a few of the reasons, Phil?
Well, I'm not old enough, for one. I don't think my parents would like it, me going off and getting married. And I'm working, but I don't have enough money to support a woman.
Could you support a girl? They're not quite so expensive. Huh? What is your ambition after you graduate from school?
I would like to be a comedian.
Well, to be a comedian, you got to have some jokes, Bill.
I have jokes.
You?
What category would you like?
You pick your own category. Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you the one about the time I went hunting. I once shot an elephant in my pajamas. How he ever got in them, I'll never know.
That's a good joke, all right. Is that your own joke?
No. It's one of yours.
That's right. That's some animal crackers. Then we try to remove the tusks. It goes on from there. We couldn't. They're very tough, the tusks in Africa. Of course, in Alabama, the Tuscaloosa.
Nothing can match on-the-spot radio for real-life drama. On May 5th, 1937, Herbert L. Morrison was covering the routine arrival of the Zeppelin Hindenburg.
The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It's bursting into flames.
Get out of the way. Get out of the way. Get it, Charlie. It's crashing. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please.
It's burning and bursting into flames and is falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks between that this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's like 20, oh, 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the passengers screaming around me. I can't talk to people whose friends are out there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, it's just laying there a massive smoking wreckage. And everybody can't hardly breathe and talk and screaming. Lady, I'm sorry. Honestly, I can hardly breathe. I'm going to step inside where I cannot see it. Charlie, that's terrible. Listen, folks, I'm going to have to stop for a minute because I've lost some voice. This is the worst thing I've ever witnessed.
Well, there was all kinds of drama on NBC Radio, from historical to soap opera.
I wash my hands of that.
The granddaddy of all soapers was One Man's Family.
One Man's Family is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Tonight we present Chapter 8, Book 43, entitled Further Developments Concerning the Man with the Funny Hair Trim. The man with the strange hair trim and with the $5,000 pinned in his coat pocket, who lay broken at the foot of a precipice at the Sky Ranch, is already passing out of the barber's range of vision and knowledge. Although he still lies down on the bank of the creek where Hank and Pinky found him, he's been completely taken over by a man in plain clothes who identified himself as Carter, and by a nurse, Mary Wagner, who answered the emergency call and has prepared him on a stretcher for the trek from the creek up to the house where the ambulance is waiting. Not only has the man in plain clothes surrounded the unconscious victim in a grim vacuum of secrecy and silence, but has completely isolated him from the entire personnel of the ranch and the whole world by ordering Nicky, Jack, and Cliff to return to the house, and by supplanting them with three other men as noncommittal as himself who appeared on the scene a few moments ago. Some of the family have been on the front porch awaiting further developments.
Well, we haven't time for that.
Don't be rude, Charlie. As romantic as any fiction on radio was the great moment on NBC when a reigning monarch renounced his throne for the woman he loved.
He just wanted to show he was one king with sense enough to come in out of the rain.
Charlie.
A few hours ago, I discharged my last duty as king and emperor. You must believe me when I tell you that I have found it impossible to carry the heavy burden of responsibility and to discharge my duties as king as I would wish to do, without the help and support of the woman I love.
No man has ever done more for his country than Sir Winston Churchill. Many are the ringing phrases Sir Winston sent echoing down the corridors of time.
Oh, I say, Bergen, that is good. It's awfully good.
Sir Winston Churchill.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
No man ever had a greater love for his mother tongue than Winston Churchill.
The more we preserve our language, see it is not unduly damaged by modern slang adaptations. I was shocked the other day to hear the Chancellor of the Exchequer use the word quantify. Have you ever heard that before? I hope you will never hear it again. Quantify. I believe it was a substitute for estimate. Another odious expression is in very common use, which is to say, in short supply. Well, why can't you say scarce? Yeah. Broadly speaking, the short words are the best. And the old words, when short, are the best of all.
Sir Winston was England's statesman humorist. America's humorous statesman was Will Rogers.
My plan, to state it in a nutshell, and that's where all plans come from. My plan is a plan to end all plans. Okay. Somebody had a plan to teach hogs birth control, and now it's a habit with them. Now, I received a wire this week from a congressman friend of mine who wants a copy of my plan to read in the congressional record. Now, I feel pretty good about that. That's the highest praise that a humorist can have, is to get your stuff into congressional record. For an outsider to get in there as a humorist without having served his apprenticeship in either the House or the Senate, well, that's... I'm not bragging, but by golly, I feel pretty big about it. When this senator read my offering, the other senator said, I object to the remarks of a professional joke maker being put into the congressional record. Well, he had me wrong. Compared to them, I'm an amateur. And the thing about my jokes is they don't hurt anybody. You can take them or leave them, you know what I mean? But with Congress, every time they make a joke, it's a law. And every time they make a law, it's a joke.
Young man, I was looking...
McCarthy is the name. What's your game?
Don't interrupt. Where can I find Edgar Bergen?
I'm sitting on him.
Boy, you young whippersnapper.
Charlie's right, Frank. You're darn tootin'. Better put your glasses on, Frank.
Now, don't be rude, Charlie. This is Frank Gallup, the famous radio and television personality.
And I'll have no more of your insolence.
Yeah, well, one more crack out of you, Gallup, and I'll slow you down to a walk.
Why, you toothpick with a thyroid condition, I just dropped by to say a few words about the heftier Chase and Sanborn coffee.
Heftier Chase and Sanborn has a flavor that really grabs you, doesn't it, Frank?
Poor Bergen. Always trying to be an announcer.
As I was saying, heftier Chase and Sanborn coffee is blended hefty to cheer you up, to warm you up, and to perk you up.
Yes, Chase and Sanborn really turns us on, eh, Charlie?
I always wondered how you kept going.
Well, now you know. Can I ask one question?
Very well.
What can we get to turn you off?
It was Jack Pearl who brought the Baron Munchausen to NBC Radio.
Baron Hoochausen?
Munchausen, Charlie. The world's greatest liar.
Okay, if you say so, Bergen. It takes one to know one.
Did I ever tell you about my last hunting trip? I was shooting giraffes in Texas.
Oh, no, wait, all of a sudden... There are no giraffes in Texas.
I know. I shot them all.
Oh, you shot them.
Never forget this, Charlie. When all of a sudden, from nowhere, comes an old boy. An old boy run right by me.
What in the world is an old boy?
Oh, that's a bird.
It's a bird.
Oh, that's a big bird.
Old boy is a bird.
Yeah, it eats radishes. Well, it eats radishes, onions, garlic, or Limburger cheese.
Yeah.
And when it runs past you.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, no. Boy.
I suppose this bird is extinct.
You see, I didn't hear it.
I say, I suppose this bird is extinct.
It always did. You I know. Don't
Why don't you give up these silly adventures and settle down?
Settle down?
Yes.
Well, I live on a farm now. My farm stretches for miles and miles.
Oh, sure. With you, everything stretches.
Yeah. So I'm going to ignore that.
Well, go ahead.
I'm going to show you how big my farm is.
Yes.
You know my nephew?
Yes.
Well, he went to the other side of the farm to milk the cows.
Uh-huh.
Now, Bernie, my little nephew Bernie, was 10, 12 years old. When he came back, he had a wife and three children.
Oh, stop that.
And he brought back 9,000 gallons of milk.
How many gallons?
41. Listen,
wait,
I never...
Wait a minute. How did the milk go from 9,000 gallons to 41?
That's good. So
answer my question. Forget. Just a moment.
Yeah?
How did the milk go from 9,000 gallons to 41?
I condensed it.
Oh, you condensed it. Where did you learn all this farming?
Oh, I learned it from my cousin Hugo.
Hugo?
Hugo.
I thought your cousin Hugo was an orchestra leader, a musician.
1,000 men.
1,000?
1,000 men.
That's right.
On 200 violins.
He's got 200 what?
Violins?
No, no, you mean violin.
Violins. No,
violins. Bye.
He likes them.
Oh, he likes them.
That's violins.
Yeah.
And he's got 15 hobos.
No, oboes.
Bums.
Never mind the musicians. Yeah, what do we know about farming?
Farming?
Yeah.
You know, Hugo's a very strong fella.
Oh, he's strong, huh?
He's got a neck like a stovepipe.
Oh, big?
No, dirty.
Dirty, yeah.
In 1949, a long shadow began to fall across the world of radio.
Get him being dramatic.
And Red Skelton made this prediction.
Of course, the next step in radio will be television. That's really going to be a boom. When television gets here, you'll just turn a knob and you'll see me in your living room. Personally, I think that's the dirtiest trick science has done to the public in a long time. Really, though, you drop a dollar in a slot and you'll get the Fred Allen. You'll drop $2 in a slot, you'll get Jack Benny. You drop $5 in a slot, you'll get Red Skelton. And about $8 change.
In 1955, NBC Radio Network started its weekend coverage, Monitor. Bringing you everything of interest, including Nichols and May.
Edith,
mm-hmm.
We're coming into Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, dear.
Puerto Rico.
Darling, it's Puerto Rico.
It's Puerto Rico.
Darling, it's Puerto Rico. There's a lot of Puerto Ricans living in my building, and they all say Puerto Rico.
Edith, everyone on the boat has said Puerto Rico since we left New York.
Well, they're wrong.
What do you mean they're wrong? They're Puerto Ricans themselves.
They're just wrong. They call Hawaii, Hawaii.
Hawaii, that's how it's pronounced.
Harry,
Hawaii.
Are you going out of your mind, or are you just trying to make me nervous?
Edith, I'm telling you, you ask anyone, ask the purser. It's pronounced Puerto Rico and Hawaii.
Oh, Harry, you're just insane. Just crazy.
Well, find out before you call me names.
You
don't
always
just call me
do this.
Edith,
you always do
I will not
do
discuss
this.
It. I will not discuss this. If
always.
You won't even inform yourself.
I don't have to
You
inform.
Wouldn't even take the word of a Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican. That's how it's spelled. P-U-E-R.
And it's
Puerto Rico.
But it's pronounced Puerto Rico. I mean, you can call it Puerto
Edith,
Rico.
Edith, I don't want to argue with you. We can continue this argument for days. We're getting off this boat and we're flying to Israel.
Israel.
In 1957, the NBC Radio Network started the first regularly scheduled hourly news service, called with simple dignity, News on the Hour. For the past 9 years, this has kept the nation abreast of what's going on in the world and in the space around it. I was listening to NBC News when we sent a monkey into orbit. Wasn't that exciting, Charlie?
Well, I wouldn't care to make a monkey of myself.
This is what President John F. Kennedy said about the orbiting chimpanzee.
This chimpanzee who was flying in space, he reports that everything is perfect and working well.
If they'd sent a pilot like you up in that rocket, Bergen, it could have stayed up longer.
And what could I have done in that rocket?
Fed the monkey.
In 1965, radio came to the rescue of millions of people during the East Coast power blackout.
What a time I had, boy.
Really, Charlie?
Yeah.
What did you do during the blackout?
Well, I did nothing really. But I got my face slapped twice for trying.
It was the quiet, reassuring voices that issued from battery radios that saved New York City from panic at 5:27 p.m. on the evening of November 9th, 1965. That evening, listening to Bill Mazur's sportcast on WNBC, people heard this.
I hope they understand that. Men, is it my imagination, or are we losing our lights?
Yeah, I'm losing the lights right here also.
Are you really?
Yeah, the whole house has gone dark.
So is ours.
Yeah, I thought it was just maybe in the project area.
You're kidding.
But the water line tells me to drive off.
It wasn't long before emergency power was turned on and radio,
and only radio,
went back on the air to reassure people there was no danger. Many people had almost forgotten about radio.
Not us swingers who listen to it every day.
Where were you, Charlie, during the New York blackout?
Well, we were in a bar listening to NBC, Skinny Dugan and me.
And I, Charlie, and I.
Oh, you too? You must have come in after the lights went out.
The last all-star big-time variety program, The Big Show, was headed by Miss Tallulah Bankhead.
Well, darlings, I know you're all waiting for the appearance of Miss Margaret Truman. Do I look all right? I hope she notices this gown. I got this specially for this occasion, but all of a sudden it feels as if it's dropping off me. Of course, I had it designed that way.
Oh, Miss Bankhead.
Why, Margaret Truman, you should have waited for a fanfare and rose petals. And we were even going to roll out a red carpet for you to stand on as part of the ceremony.
Oh, you know I don't like to stand on ceremony.
Darling, the first line and already a joke. But you do look divine, darling. What a beautiful gown. Really, you didn't have to go to all that trouble to have a gown made just for this occasion.
I didn't.
Well, what a coincidence. So did I. And I adore your gown. What I've been trying to find out is, how do you like my gown? I designed it myself, you know. Don't you think it's sweet, Miss Truman? I do, don't you?
Yes.
Oh, it's so kind. So kind of you to say so many nice things about my dress. Even if I do say so myself. And I think I did. Thank you, Miss Truman.
You're welcome, Miss Bankhead.
Now, how are things, Miss Truman? How's everyone at home?
I'm fine.
And how are the Blairs?
The Blairs?
Well, yes, darling. Didn't I read somewhere that you were staying with the Blairs while they're repapering your house or something?
Yes, we lost our place temporarily.
Is there anyone at home listening to our program?
I guess so.
Oh, how sweet. Well, would you like to say hello to anyone special?
May I?
Oh, please do, darling. What a scoop. Go right ahead, Miss Truman.
All right. Hello, Margaret.
Margaret? Who's Margaret?
That's me. I'd like to hear somebody on this program call me by my first name.
Oh, that's so sweet, darling. And you don't have to call me Miss Bankhead, darling. Call me by my given name, will you, darling?
Yes, darling.
Hello, I'm Carpenter.
Hello, well, I'm Mortimer.
Where's the boss?
Well, where's your tools?
No. I'm Ken Carpenter, the announcer, to tell the people about Heftier Chase and Sanborn coffee.
Oh, well, what are your Chase and Sanborn what?
Heftier Chase and Sanborn coffee. Today, it's instant Chase and Sanborn, or coffee with a hefty flavor that really grabs you.
Would you run that through the grinder once again, Mr. Carpenter?
Mortimer, listen carefully. People who haven't tried Chase and Sanborn lately haven't any idea what coffee goodness they've been missing. Heftier instant Chase and Sanborn coffee has been blended hefty to cheer you up and warm you up. Blended hefty to perk you up. That's why every cup of it gives you coffee with flavor that really grabs you.
No! Well, why didn't you say that in the first place? Well, I gotta go now.
Where?
I'm going out to find some heftier instant Chase and Sanborn and let it grab me.
When the moon comes over mountain, I'll be alone with my memory of you.
Thank you, Kate, for reminding us of your theme. Among the greatest of the radio greats, Fred Allen was always a little over the heads of the masses, always serving caviar to the general.
Yeah, there always was something fishy about Allen. I should have sued him for not paying me for getting him a job with Tenderleaf Tea.
Edgar, I'm here to talk to Charlie.
Well, it's too late, fossil face. You can tell it to the judge, that's
easy. Now, McCarthy, I came here to bury the hatchet, and I know approximately where I am going to bury it. You must hate me.
I'll be glad to.
Well, this thing has upset me, Edgar. Last night, as I lay upon my pillow, I brushed aside a vagrant tear which hung pendant-like from my glistening orb. I was thinking.
You were stinking.
I tell you what I'd like to do, Charlie. I'd like to have you appear in a little sketch on my program for which you will be handsomely rewarded.
Yeah, well, how much?
How much what?
Well, money, money.
Well, I had thought of 400 pounds.
Sterling?
No, pounds of Tenderleaf Tea.
There I go, holding the bag again.
The play is called Weekend at Joe's Flophouse. And you play the part of a big lumber magnate, Fiorello Q. Splinterbottom III.
The third, no less.
The third. Yeah, you're still in the money. If you have the parts, let's read over the play. Good, Edgar. Now, as the curtain rises, we see that outside it is a beautiful summer afternoon. I enter. I am a Chinese detective. I speak to the butler. Mr. Butler, your master, Mr. Splinterbottom, life in great danger. I have come here secretly to warn you. I am Detective Wanlong Pan, famous Chinese G-man, Oriental Dick Tracy. Where is your master?
How blue the sky, how bright the sun. As I look beyond the daffodils, I see the shimmering heat over the rutabaga patch. Who got shot?
You did. Lie down, you're dead.
How do you like that? I didn't even finish my speech.
Oh, yes, you did.
Oh, no, I didn't. You shot me right in the middle of the rutabaga patch.
This isn't much of a part, Fred. Now, I thought Charlie was in all through the show and didn't leave the stage. Well, he doesn't, Edgar. He stays there as a dead body. Well, then, pardon me for objecting, now, Mr. Allen. Now, just a minute. You stay out of this, Curly. By that, I suppose you're referring to my hairline. What hairline?
Well...
Why, from the neck up, you are indecent.
Oh.
Seen more fuzz on a choir boy's cheek.
Your behavior is not a credit to the acting profession, Mr. Allen.
You mean that I am a ham?
No, why insult an innocent pig? No.
I told you to keep quiet or I'll put a rubber beret on your head and use you for a plunger.
Every weekday evening, the entire nation stopped to listen to Amos and Andy, the all-time greats of radio.
And I spent 30 years working for you without a kind word or a raise in pay.
What does that have to do with Amos and Andy being among the radio greats?
You're among the radio ingrates.
Listen, Amos, you don't know politics like I do.
Tell me this, though. Why can't they have a Democrat and a Republican president at the same time?
The trouble with that is, the Republican would get everything messed up for the Democrat, and vice versa.
And what?
Vice versa.
He ain't running, is he?
Who ain't running?
Bryce Vissers.
I didn't say Bryce Vissers. I said vice versa.
Is he a Democrat or a Republican?
Oh, the thing we has got to do, Amos, is to make up our minds if we is going to be Republican or Democrat.
I believe I'll be a Democrat.
Well, I'm going to be a Republican. You go ahead, be a Democrat. You is crazy.
You was all right, ain't you?
Certainly I was all right.
Then I'm glad I was crazy.
No one is remembered with more love and affection than Mrs. George Burns. Gracie Allen.
Hello, everybody. What do I do now?
Well, just make something up, you know.
Oh, all right. I'll make up a riddle. I'll give you 3 chances, and if you can't guess it, you win.
If I can't guess it, I win? Well, what happens if I guess it?
Well, then it's a tie.
It's a tie?
Now, what's the difference?
Just a minute, Gracie. This one is on me. A fellow was in a restaurant. He ordered spinach, mashed potatoes, and cheesecake. How did I know that he was a soldier?
Oh, is that the one where the fella had on a uniform? Yeah, that's very good, Judge. Tell us.
I'd like to know is how do I allow myself to get mixed up into these things?
Oh, that's very funny. Now, I'll make one up. Not only can I make up riddles, Judge, I can also tell you what you're thinking about. I'm a mind reader.
Listen, Gracie, is there anything that phases you?
I don't think so.
No.
All right, now, think of something.
Well, all right, I'm thinking.
Is it green?
Is what green?
Does it hang from the ceiling and whistle?
Does what hang from the ceiling and whistle?
Does it run along the floor and sing?
Listen.
Does it climb up buildings and swim?
Just a minute. I thought you said that you could read my mind.
Well, George, how can I read your mind if you keep on asking me all those silly questions?
I'm asking... Listen, let's talk about something else. I'm sorry to hear about your missing brother.
Oh, that's too bad, George, because my brother's missing, too.
The only difference between you and me is that I have the power of mind over matter, and you have no mind, and it doesn't seem to matter.
Oh, I bet you tell that to all the girls.
Never mind. I still would like to know, how is your brother?
My brother? Oh, well, I think they ought to open up all the prisons. It would help prosperity.
Wait a minute. That's the wrong answer.
No, that's the right answer, but you asked the wrong question.
One of the most unforgettable addresses in the United States for many winters was 63 Wistful Vista, or was it 35?
Would you believe 79?
Well, everyone remembers Fibber McGee and Molly and their closet.
Hey, remember when we were kids in Peoria and I built that big hollow snowman with a tunnel under it and I'd crawl into it at night and talk to people when they walked past? Remember that?
Yeah. It was one of those nights that old man McNally went on the water wagon.
Yeah.
Wasn't that fun?
Yeah. Was till my school teacher went past with a new boyfriend. She says, oh, look at the cute snowman. And I tipped the snowman silk hat and says, you're cute too, kiddo, but who's your friend with the jazz bow tie and the bell-bottom face?
Oh, dear.
Well, her boyfriend started kicking the bejunior out of the snowman, and I quick ducked out of the tunnel, ran around the block, and come up behind them weeping because they ruined my snowman, and she made him give me a dollar to stop bawling. I cried myself into 22 bucks that night.
We went on some beautiful sleigh rides in Peoria, too.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the first time you ever kissed me was the night you rented the cutter from the livery stable.
Well, I had to kiss you, Tootsie. Had too much invested to waste the evening. Besides, holding hands is all right in the summertime, but when it comes mitten weather, a man has to establish better contacts.
I'll bet tonight would be a beautiful night for a sleigh ride, McGee.
I know where I can get a sleigh. Farmer friend of mine out on Route 62, Mel Hess. His name is Mel of the Hess, but they call him Mel for short. He'll rent us a sleigh. Well, I'll call old Mel then, huh?
What's his number, dearie?
I don't know. I got it wrote down in a little book here somewhere. Oh, I know. It's right here in the hall closet.
I hate sleigh rides.
All right, won't take a minute. I'll go.
Again, who is that distinguished-looking man?
Well, let me introduce you, Effie. It's the famous opera broadcaster.
Oh, good.
Milton Cross, this is Effie Clinker.
How do...
I've always wanted to be an opera, Mr. Cross. Could you give me some advice?
My dear madam...
Mademoiselle to you, Milty baby.
Can you sing?
Would you care to give me an audition?
Here?
Oh, goodness, no. In private, of course.
Well, I do have coffee every afternoon in my studio. Heftier, Chase and Sanborn. It has flavor that really grabs you.
Ooh, good.
You see, Heftier Chase and Sanborn is blended hefty to cheer you up.
Tell me more.
Warm you up. And perk you up. In short, Chase and Sanborn flavor really grabs you.
Well, it's about time. I've been up for grabs for years.
Charlie, will you ever forget the time Jack Benny lost his wallet?
Yeah, and I found it.
Hello, police department. Put the chief on the phone. Hello, chief? This is Jack Benny again. Remember the last time I spoke to you about the wallet I lost? What? Oh, you must remember. It was only 5 minutes ago. Well, look, chief, I'm willing to offer a reward. Take this down. If the finder of a black wallet containing $8 in cash and some important papers will return the money, he can keep the papers. Call me if you hear anything, will you, Chiefy? All right, goodbye. See, if I could only remember the last time I took my wallet out of my pocket. Now, let's see. Did I spend anything yesterday? No. Friday? No. Thursday? No. 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 No, 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 no. Well, that takes care of April. Come in.
Oh, hello, Jack.
Well, this is a surprise. Hello, Edgar. Hello, Charlie. Nice of you to drop in.
I was dragged.
Ah, what's on your mind, Edgar?
Jack, I just wanted to ask you, did you lose a wallet?
Yes, 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 yes. Yes, 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 yes.
There seems to be some doubt about it, don't you?
Did you find it?
Jack, you're trembling. You're trembling. After all, it's only $8. It isn't worth being upset about. Let me be the judge of that.
Who got it? Where? Who? Who got it?
Who? The guy is really worried.
Come on, fellas, don't do this to me. Who found a wallet?
Well, Charlie did. And if you can identify it, we'll give it back to you.
Well, of course I can identify it. On the outside, it's stamped compliments of the Acme Sand and Gravel Company. Founded 1896.
Jack, have you any other identification?
Yes, yes. My initials were on the flap.
Yeah.
And in the card case, there's a picture of Pola Negri.
Ooh.
And then there were three $2 bills in it and two singles. And the serial numbers were A1. C. That was on the first $2.
Yeah.
And on the second bill, there were...
No, please.
All right, Charlie. I think that's enough, Jack. We believe you.
Yes.
Charlie, give Mr. Benny his wallet.
Okay. Here it is.
Well, this is wonderful. Charlie, I really don't know how to thank you.
You don't, huh? Would you care for a suggestion?
No.